Shopify's already taken the cash register online, helping millions sell billions around the world. But did you know that Shopify can do the same thing at your retail store? Give your point of sale system a serious upgrade with Shopify. That's right, Shopify is the sound of selling everywhere. Online, in-store, on social media, and beyond. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. With Shopify POS, you can accept credit cards, mobile payments, and every other major payment method, all with low fees and transparent pricing, starting on day one. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/MLB podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/MLB podcast to take your retail business to the next level today. Shopify.com/MLB podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Radio.com Sports presents Big Time Baseball with MLB insider John Heyman and former major leaguer Tony Gwynn Jr.
We are back at it again. Welcome into Big Time Baseball. I'm Tony Gwynn Jr. alongside my partner, John Heyman. We're going to do things a little bit differently this week with playoffs literally right around the corner. We decided to highlight some of our favorite storylines throughout the year. Remember, you can follow myself on Twitter at Tony Gwynn Jr. You can follow John at John Heyman. And now this show, you can follow it on Twitter. Follow us at RDC_BTB. That's Big Time Baseball. Make sure you subscribe, rate, and review Big Time Baseball on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcast. John, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you doing, Tony? I'm looking forward to our guest.
Yes, absolutely. Big guest today, Yankees general manager Brian Cashman will join us. I have some mixed feelings about it. He ruined my pop's chance to win his one world title in 1998, but I have since gotten over it and really appreciate the work that Brian Cashman's done. So we're definitely looking forward to having him on. Playoffs right around the corner, John. Can we start with my Padres? They clinched their first playoff spot in 14 years, taking down the Seattle Mariners in extra innings. This team was picked to be kind of the surprise team. Not only have they follow suit with the season they have, but I think they've been a little better than a lot of people even expected.
Yeah, fantastic job. Congratulations to Tony and all the Padres fans and all of San Diego out there. Been a long time coming since 2006, and A.J. Preller and the rest have to take their hat off. Fantastic job. Great at the deadline. Sometimes people think we make too much of the out of the deadline, but he's done a fantastic job there. Trevor Rosenthal has really beefed up that bullpen. Clevinger brought him that ace that he needed. You know, they got the catching all squared away with a little more offense in there. Mitch Moreland, the hitter, and he did great work in the winter too. Obviously, Grisham's been very good, but Cronenworth, I mean, he you mentioned it last week, NL Rookie of the Year, and I threw in Sixto Sanchez, but I think you're going to be right. I think Cronenworth's going to be the Rookie of the Year in the National League. And when that trade was made, nobody even mentioned his name. I didn't remember hearing it. And sometimes, you know, the ones you don't hear about are the ones that make the biggest difference. So good job by the Padres, and congratulations to you in particular, Tony.
I appreciate it. Just to show you how off the radar Jake Cronenworth was, I remember going into spring training for the first few games before everything got shut down. And we went in with the storyline being he was a two-way player. He could pitch a little bit. He had pitched in the minor leagues. and he was a good defensive player. Like that, him being as good as he is offensively was completely off of everyone's radar. And that was among some of the moves that AJ Preller made that solidified this team. But I don't think the Padres are in the spot they are in without two guys. Obviously, Fernando Tatis Jr., who has cooled off a little bit since his electric start. But more importantly, Manny Machado. He signs the big deal last year. And, you know, by his standards, maybe he struggled a little bit. I would argue he was pretty much right at his normal statistics. But this year, he's been exceptional. And to me, I think he's kind of surpassed Fernando Tatis Jr. in terms of a chance at the MVP. But I really don't think the Padres are in the position they are without them. Now, the team that is a possibility that they could be facing off against, and I think this is probably one of the best storylines of the year, is the Miami Marlins, John. And we had Don Mattingly on earlier this year, and at the beginning of the season, and he told us he felt like his team could compete. I think both of us heard him, but it kind of went in one ear, out the other, not really believing what he says. But here they are with a chance at right now at the five spot in this playoff seating, with a chance to get in the playoffs. And with some of their young starting pitching, they got a chance to maybe surprise some folks.
Amazing. Yeah, I didn't think I didn't believe it either. Obviously, his players listened more carefully than we did. I know you and I were on the same page on that one. He was just talking, and it was a they've had an interesting and difficult season. It's amazing that they're in the position that they're in right now as we speak. Now, it's a gauntlet. They've got seven games left, four against Atlanta, three against the Yankees. So no guarantees. They're in good position. They are to be congratulated for that. I know their PR staff is working overtime, sending everybody emails, telling everybody what a great story it is. And I for me, it's overkill. I kind of know that. I'm kind of focused on them. Right. So, for some people, maybe it's a revelation. I don't know, but it's a great story. And nobody can say we're a jinx, because everybody we've had on, I think, is in the playoffs, right? We had Dusty Baker on. We had Aaron Boone. Not that the Yankees weren't going to be in the playoffs. Dusty's still got a little bit of work to do, but he's going to make it. Obviously, Dave Roberts, but Mattingly is the one. If they make the playoffs, I say we're a good luck charm. We're going to take the credit for this one. I don't know. It's an amazing story. It really is.
We should have zero problems booking anybody moving forward. I mean, exactly. We've left out Jace Tingler, who we also had on. So every single manager we've had on has at this point looks like they're going to be in the playoffs. So hopefully that goes a long way in booking guests moving forward. How about the Indians? Because this is an interesting one. They seem to, at the beginning of the season, or really during the offseason, be signaling that maybe it was time to start rebuilding a little bit. Not necessarily rebuilding, because you still have Lindor, you still have Ramirez, but it seemed like they were kind of taking their foot off the gas. But despite that, and despite a few members of their club kind of putting everybody at risk, they maintain their winning ways and are in the thick of it as well, John.
Yeah, I saw them as a playoff team. They do better at developing pitchers than any other team. I'm not sure what their secret sauce is, but wow, fantastic. And they were able to trade Kluber, and I didn't think they would really miss a beat. They had Bieber, obviously, was an all-star MVP. You had Clevinger at the top of that rotation also at the time. Plesak, extremely talented. Savali, another one. And they just keep on coming. They do a fantastic job of developing pitchers. So they stay in every game by keeping that score down. And, they're a team that ultimately has to keep their eye on the dollars and, use the I don't know if it was because of the keeping eye on the dollars or because of the stepping out in Chicago. It might have been a combination, but trading Clevinger, not many teams could have absorbed that one. But they had the rotation to do it. Obviously, Clevinger's a star. He's helped San Diego. Great pitcher, and he's going to be there another 3 years at least. So San Diego did a good job, but Cleveland, they know what they're doing to be in there every year with the limited revenues that they have. I got to give them credit.
Yeah, they certainly are a model for teams that may not have the payroll depth that they want, but still want to find themselves competing. Cleveland, I think, is the gold standard for that at this point. Let's talk some Blue Jays, because they were kind of like the dark horse pick to get into the playoffs, and it seems like they may be ahead of schedule in making the playoffs, but this is a young team with a bright future. This team is another one, another good storyline that's been exciting to kind of watch and develop over the year.
Yeah, and they've had it tough too. They obviously lost their home. They've had to play out of Buffalo, which it's not just saying a minor league park. It is a minor league park. They've redone it, and it's played fine. I mean, it's obviously kind of a hitter's park, but that fits them. And they're going to be in the playoffs, and give Charlie Montoyo credit. It's not been an easy year. They've had a lot of injuries. Bichette was out for a long time, and Nate Pearson, their young pitcher, their closers, all of them have been out at different times. Giles, we haven't seen him. I don't think we are going to see him. So they've had injury problems. They don't have a home, and they're going to be in the playoffs. So I give them credit. Their future is better than their present, though. I don't think it's going to be their year. Of course, in this season, who knows? Who the heck knows who's going to come out of this? But we think, they're probably a long shot in the playoffs this year. But certainly Bichette's a superstar in the making, and Vladdy, I think he hasn't tapped his potential yet, and they're going to be at least a great lineup for years to come. And give them credit for signing Ryu. A lot of people shy away from those big pitching dollars for free agents, but that one looks like a good one. If people thought that was an overpay, that one looks like an underpay to me.
Yeah, that one was the signing that made you realize, okay, they're actually serious about how they feel about this young talent. And, you look at the year they've had in terms of how difficult it's been. They're almost, in some ways, I feel like they're almost built for the kind of season they had, right? You lose your home. Only a young roster would just keep plowing through and not really worry about, not being where they're supposed to be. So I find this Toronto Blue Jays team a very interesting team. Let's talk some White Sox. This is to me the mirror image of the Padres, only in the American League, managed by Ricky Renteria, who I think is a terrific manager. They got a lot of young talent, and they're actually living up to that young talent. They're first in the Central right now.
Yeah, I mean, huge talent. Luis Robert is in a little bit of a slump. He's going to be a superstar. I think Kyle Lewis would probably beat him out for Rookie of the Year at this point, but fantastic defensive and offensive player. Eloy Jimenez, a great threat. Abreu, to me, he's the MVP. We can have that debate another time, maybe next week, but I think he's the MVP. Anderson, he's got a case for it as well. They've got two excellent catchers. So, you got a shortstop and second baseman hitting in the, around the 350 range. That's a pretty good sign. And their pitching has been a lot better than people would expect. If you look at the stats, they're in the top 4 or 5 in the league in pitching, which nobody would have thought of. The Keuchel signing, speaking of free agent signings, that was a good one. He had a little bit of a back thing just coming back now, but that's a good one. Giolito with a no-hitter. I mean, they've set it up to time it to make the trades and the free agents and do all that when their top prospects were coming up. And, I give them credit. They've done a nice job. And to make that trade with the Cubs, it's not easy to do. They gave up their one of their best players in Jose Quintana at the time and came away with two very good players, including Cease and Jimenez and some other prospects. So they made some great trades. Their drafts have been okay. Sometimes they hit. They have some huge hits in the draft and some misses, but their trades and their signings have been very good, and they look like a very tough team right now, and certainly they could win it all.
Man, where would they be if they still had Fernando Tatis Jr. on that roster right now? I know White Sox fans are probably kicking themselves. We out here love it. So I got to say this that you mentioned, to me, I think you hit on the most important part, John, and that was the starting rotation. They have, you mentioned Cease, you mentioned Keuchel. They have a veteran, you mentioned Giolito. They have a veteran pitching staff that I think could bode well, especially come postseason. This team could be a very, very dangerous team. All right, let's kind of move to some storylines where things haven't necessarily gone as well as maybe it was thought to have gone at the beginning of the season. We'll start with the Brewers. Yelich having, I mean, listen, it's only 60 games, or it's almost 60 games, but he's having a bad year. He's hitting .215 right now. And the funny thing about, or the irony in this, I should say, is that at the beginning of the season, he actually talked about, you know, the fact that in a 60-game season, there are going to be guys that have a bad year that you're used to seeing have good years. And it just so happens that he's one of those guys this year. The Brewers not out of the picture here, still in the hunt for that last playoff spot. But this team has struggled this year.
Yeah, that was something that he is the one who said it, and he is the guy that you would point to as having the atypical season. A fantastic hitter, batting .215 as we speak now. Their offense has just not been very good at all. They've just gotten outscored early in games, and, you know, they have a fantastic bullpen with Hader at the end, and the rookie having that fantastic year as well with a changeup. He's been incredible, you know, and they've had great starting pitching at the top with Burns and Woodruff. It's just basically been the offense has really not come together. Braun is starting to hit, which is interesting. And we'll see if he was seemed kind of nostalgic there in his potentially his final game in Milwaukee. But, you know, he's showing that he still has something left and can play next year, whether it's Milwaukee or maybe more likely an American League team next year. But they're still in it, as you said, and it looks – thankfully, like we may not have a team below 500 in the playoffs because there are three teams exactly at 500 vying for that eighth spot. And if the winner of those teams finishes above 500 and Philly stays at 500 or better and Miami does, Miami's got that tough schedule that we talked about. Thankfully, we'll have no losing teams in the playoffs in the National League. And I think the American League, same way. You've got Houston as the one team that's just a little bit above 500 that's likely going to be in the playoffs, but they could hang in there too. So I didn't want to see any teams below 500 make it, and I think it's very likely at this point that we will not have losing teams in the playoffs. And Milwaukee, to me, they should be a playoff team. They've overachieved, I thought, in the past. This year, I think they're underachieving a little bit.
Yeah, the interesting thing about the Brewers also is the fact that going into the year, you thought that the pitching would be the issue for them. Their offense would have to carry them. As you mentioned, it's been quite the opposite. I guess we can't have a storylines of disappointment without bringing up the New York Mets. There's been a lot of bad things coming out of there, including losing Tom Seaver a few weeks ago. I guess one of the good things is that the team has been sold to, or is in the process of being sold to Steve Cohen. But on the field, this team, I think, has been disappointing. There were some people who had this team picked to win the East, and they're another team that's not out of it, still fighting for one of those last few spots. But it has been another season of disappointment, I think.
They are underachieving, no question about it. I mean, you can slice it any way you want, but look at that offense that they have and the years that they're having. I know Alonso's not having anything like the year that he had last year, but McNeil has come around. Dominic Smith is a star at this point. J.D. Davis can hit. You know, they have an excellent offensive team. They certainly have good names in the pen. Diaz has come around. They have possibly the best pitcher in the game. I think a lot of people would say that he is. And DeGrom, right now they need a miracle to make the playoffs. I mean, you know, they have to go 7-0 and watch other teams lose. It's not very likely at this point. So this year has been a major disappointment. Other than Steve Cohen, as you said, being in the process of buying the team, I think the fans are pretty excited about that. We'll talk about that more on the Insider Corner.
Okay, let's go to the Reds. This is a team many had as one of the dark horses in the National League, and they've started to play a little bit better. They're hanging on to that eighth spot right now. Trevor Bauer is certainly having a Cy Young campaign for himself. But this is also a team I think a lot of people, you know, thought would be in a different position than the eighth spot. What's your take on their storyline this year?
Yeah, I feel like they've underachieved too, and it's not just because I picked them to win that division, but they have the talent. They have that top three. People are citing that top three with Bauer, Castillo, and Gray as a reason they could be a threat in the playoffs. I mean, look, they just have not played that well. I personally don't think they're playing the way they're playing. I don't see them as a major threat in the playoffs. They certainly have a good chance to get in, but to me, it's been, other than Bauer and a few others, it's been a disappointment for the Reds.
Yeah, offensively, in that ballpark, I think people expected them to be able to put up some runs. They haven't done that often, and it has really relied on those three starting pitchers to get it done. They can be dangerous. We've seen the Nationals pull this off. Not necessarily look that great during the regular season, find their way in, and all of a sudden those three-headed horsemen take over and can really guide the series in a different direction. All right, let's talk about these last two. Astros, Dodgers. We'll start with the Astros. This year, I think, could have been a gift to the Astros based on the pandemic, not having to deal with fans beating on trash cans or talking about trash cans all year long. They kind of avoid that because of the pandemic. But this team has still run into some issues, especially on the injury front. This hasn't been the season I think the Astros thought they could have.
Yeah, well, the Verlander injury now, and you know, that he'll need Tommy John. He's out for this year and presumably next year as well. That just, you know, really effectively ends their chances. They probably will sneak into the playoffs, but nobody can see them getting through that playoff gauntlet without a Verlander. I mean, Fromber has done a nice job in the rotation, Valdez. You know, they've had some pleasant surprises, but, you know, I thought they would struggle. Fans or no fans, I was there in spring training before the pandemic hit. You know, they had really lost their mojo. They were pretty downcast. I think that, you know, they weren't cocky at all. They felt like a team that was hurting. And I think the other teams have just shown what they think of them, you know, not just Joe Kelly, but I think the other teams are not like speaking to them or, you know, I know you're not supposed to be probably fraternizing in a pandemic anyway, but I think they're getting the cold shoulder from everybody. And I think it's probably affecting them. Springer has come around. Bregman's obviously a good player. Boy, Altuve, I think he's been hurt. Has not been himself, but you know, I didn't expect them to be great this year. I'm not shocked that the A's are winning that division, but you know, to me, this is what the expectation I had, a very, very mediocre season for Houston.
Yeah, uneven at best for the Houston Astros. Let's move to the Dodgers, who seemingly just keep the party going with themselves. They've won seven straight divisions, looking like it's going to be eight straight after this year. I don't know what the storyline was, pretty much what the storyline has kind of played out for the Dodgers this year. They seemingly are on track to possibly get to a World Series this year.
Yeah, and everybody they bring up turns out to be great. Somehow they do.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
About developing pitchers, they develop everything. And everybody who comes up does a fantastic job. And look at this year. I mean, May has been outstanding. He came in and started that first game for Kershaw, who has been himself, as it turns out, in the end. Gonsolin has been terrific, and all this enabled them to trade Stripling, and they came up with a great prospect for Stripling in Kendall Williams. So he may be another great one they'll have in the pipeline. Gavin Lux, who didn't make the team for whatever reason out of spring training number two, he can hit. He just hit a 453-foot home run the other day. Will Smith, young catcher, he can hit great. He can hit. Yeah. I'm not sure why he doesn't play every day. That'd be my one comment, and maybe I should have asked Dave Roberts when we had him last week, you know, why. I mean, Barnes is a nice backup, but Will Smith, to me, is a star. I mean, it's a team of stars, and the expectation is that they win the World Series. That's been my expectation from the start, and that has not changed.
Yeah, storylines of 2020. Some have gone as planned, some hasn't. John, let's roll right into Inside Corner. Got a lot to cover here. Let's start with Rob Manfred. He has expressed his like for expanded playoffs. Does that mean we're talking about 16? It seems a little much to me.
Yeah, you're right, Tony. Everybody has kind of assumed when he's been quoted different places saying he likes the expanded playoffs that we're talking about the 16 that we're using this year. This is an unusual season, obviously, the pandemic year. Hopefully things get back to normal. We pray that they do next year. Their proposal previously had been for 14. So I think that's what he's talking about, 14 teams. And I myself think 16 are too many teams. I don't like the idea that there's a good chance a team with a losing record gets in. As we talked about, it doesn't feel like it. It feels like we're going to escape that this year. If Houston hangs in there and they're just a little bit over 500 as we do this, and in the National League, you've got three teams right at 500. So, and with only one of them likely to get in, it looks good that we're going to avoid that. But normally, if you have 16 teams, more than half the teams making it, you're going to have a team under 500 in the playoffs. And I think that they'll be happy with 14. So everybody who's been out there getting all upset about the 16 and the potential of the expanded playoffs forever, I think we do have that. I think 14 are likely. I don't think it'll be 16. So I think that's good news all around. I feel okay with 14. I'm a traditionalist, but I can live with it and I understand it. The teams are losing money this year. I don't think there's any question about that. And they're going to try to make it back a little bit. And they wanted to do the 14 before we even heard of pandemics. So I think that that's the likelihood, 14 teams going forward.
Well, thank you, Rob Manfred, for not thinking 16. I just think it plays out to be too many teams. And as you said, you run the risk of having teams that are under 500. That doesn't seem as bad in the 60-game season, but it seems a lot worse in the 162-game season where you have teams that are under 500 making the playoffs. So hopefully 14 is the max. I'm open to expansion of the playoffs. I think it attracts more fans. It makes it a more exciting time of year. But there is a line where you can go over and be too much. Let's talk a little bit about some injuries updates we got going around the league, particularly Bryce Harper and Realmuto for the Phillies.
Yeah, I mean, these are their two best players. They are the two key guys. And obviously, we've been on here talking about Realmuto being day-to-day in the past, and he hasn't been back. And that was a week ago when we talked about day-to-day. Right. They think Realmuto probably will be back tomorrow, which is Tuesday, so we will see. People who listen to this later in the week will find out if that was correct or not. And Harper has that lower back situation, which always sounds dicey. You never know, but he has told people that he feels okay. He's going to be all right, so they think either tonight or tomorrow for Harper as well. And it's important for the Phillies. They're not automatically in. They're in right now, but they're not automatically in. They're fighting like about six other teams in the National League right now. So it is crucial. But the news appears to be good on Realmuto and Harper.
Yeah, they're going to need those two guys. Those are pretty important pieces for that Philly team. I think the last 3 days of the season has the chance to be epic in terms of teams switching spots, seeding switching spots. You have to pay pretty close attention, I think, over the last three or four days to see who's going to fit in with those final spots. Now, inevitably, when we get to this time of year, conversations for the following season start to come up. So we got a lot of ground to cover. Let's start with the Minnesota Twins and Nelson Cruz. What are you hearing on that front?
Yeah, I'm hearing that he wants to be back. I think it's kind of even come out that people are saying he wants to be back, but of course his agent is doing his job and saying, well, we'll see about that. We don't know because there's no deal yet. But the belief is he's done so well there as a 40-year-old, incredible. You got to give the guy credit. We think he would like to come back. Can a 40-year-old get a 2-year deal? I guess it's possible. He got 1 year and an option as a 38-year-old, but he's even better now. So, I think that, potentially he might even get a 2-year deal. I don't know. We shall see. But I see him going back to the Twins. I'm sure other teams will be trying, especially if we have the DH in every. In both leagues, his value may go up even further, but he may be the first 40-year-old with a multi-year contract.
Nelson Boomstick Cruz is one of the best people I've had a chance to play with. And it's exciting to see him having this kind of success this late in his career. Hope nothing but the best for him moving forward. Let's talk New York Yankees, and we'll have a chance to ask Brian Cashman about this here in a little bit. But what are you hearing in terms of decisions on Paxton, Tanaka, and Gardner?
Yeah, we'll see what Brian Cashman has to say. My understanding, not a shocker, they want to bring LeMahieu back. Of course, their fans wouldn't stand for it if they don't. Fantastic signing, 2 years, $24 million, and obviously that price is going to go way up, and the length is going to go up too. But they're going to have to do their best to bring him back, and I'm sure that they will. And my understanding is he wants to be back too. I haven't talked to him directly, but so I think there's a pretty good likelihood of that. Tanaka has been everything you could have asked, and fantastic in the postseason. That 7 year, $175 million commitment is up. But I think the fact he's so good in the postseason means they would like to bring him back as well. And then Gardner, while he's not having his usual year or even close, I mean, if you look at the analytics numbers, they look a little bit better than the actual numbers. And he's such a great Yankee, and he said he wants to come back. They, of course, will not pick up his option, which is $10 million. They'll buy him out. But I think if they bring him back for half of that or so, he will be back. As far as Paxton goes, obviously that's not a priority at this point. I think he is likely out for the year. We'll see what Cashman says about that. But, they would consider it at a low price. Paxton, unfortunately for him, had bad timing with his injury this year as a free agent now.
That has been one of the tougher parts about this 2020 season. A lot of injuries this year, a lot of guys who had a chance to capitalize on a good year miss out on that and will enter free agency going in injured, which is never good for any of these players. We're going to end with the New York Mets here in a little bit in terms of this inside corner, but player options. You got some options, player/team options out there. What are you hearing on those fronts?
Yeah, there's a lot of guys with player options that we don't always talk about. We talk about free agents, but player options are a big deal. And here are the ones I think will be picked up on my list. Rizzo, Anthony Rizzo, obviously $14.5 million with the Cubs. They will obviously pick that up and might even try for an even longer deal. Moreland over there with San Diego, he's valuable at the trade deadline. He's valuable now. He's got a very reasonable option, I think, at $3 million. So they will pick that up as well. I think the no options pickup would be Gardner, as I just mentioned, at $10 million. They're not going to pick that up, but they'd like to bring him back. And I think the Gordon, $14 million, Seattle's not going to pick that up. Colton Wong, $12.5 million, will not pick that up. Leak at $18 million with a $5 million buyout. They'll buy him out. He opted out this year. That's not the reason, but they will buy him out. Brandhand, $10 million. I think they won't pick that up. In Cleveland, he's a pretty solid pitcher. That one's a little bit closer than many of the others, but I would guess that they will not. We'll see. Braun has a $15 million mutual option. The mutual option never works out. So
Never.
So it's a $4 million buyout, but I think he can still keep playing. He's a pretty good player. He'll play there or somewhere else. And two more that will be picked up, I didn't mention earlier. I think the Marlins will pick up Kinsler, who's their closer, $4 million. That's a bargain. They could pick him up and trade him if they like. They got a lot of pitchers. We'll see if they do that. Marte, they love the guy. $12.5 million, not cheap, but I think they picked that up. And, in fact, they basically said they will. They've traded for him. They've given up pieces for him. And so I think they will pick that up. And I think they'll keep him. Someone might guess they're going to trade him, but I think they like him so much they're going to keep him around.
Yeah. Oh. Well, hopefully it works out for those teams and those players in terms of those options. All right, let's end the inside corner with this New York Mets. They seemingly have a buyer. Now it's up to the votes. Will Steve Cohen have the votes to get this thing passed?
Yeah, I think he will. I think Jerry Reinsdorf is going to be a no. He has come out and given a statement that he's going to consider it like he does with everybody else, but he's been an often no vote. In fact, he got Jeff Morad nixed
when he tried
to buy a team, as you're well aware. Yeah, a team out there. And Reinsdorf is an influential voice, but it might be a lone voice here. There's one other that might vote no, but I think he'll get in. It's hard to turn it down. The Yankees will be a yes vote. I don't know if they're going to say that out loud, but that's an interesting one as they're the crosstown rival, and everybody assumes that Steve Cohen, with his reported $14 billion, and that might even be light, is going to spend wildly. I don't know if that's true or not, but he has the potential to do it. You know, he spent tens of millions on artwork, and people are expecting him to spend hundreds of millions on players. We don't know if that's the case. I do think he will spend more than the Wilpons have, and the Yankees will be in favor, and I think most teams are. I think it's hard to turn it down. If it turn it down, then the value, the franchise price is going to go down, and nobody in MLB wants to see that. Even if Reinsdorf doesn't like the fact Cohen may be spending or doesn't like his history, obviously he did have the insider trading issue, which is a serious issue, and I don't want to make light of that, but I think they're past that at this point. You know, they will vet him and we'll see how he does, but I think he's going to make it. Other notes related to that, A-Rod has somebody in, who's representing A-Rod is coming out and suggesting that A-Rod, J-Lo will match that if Cohen is not approved. And as we've said, we think Cohen's going to be approved anyway, but I think that's just PR. You know, if it's not approved, the price comes down. It doesn't make any sense to match it at that point. So, and I think A-Rod's a good enough businessman to know that, but he's getting some good PR there. I have heard that he has told people that he would have kept or will if he does get the team, which at this point looks like a very strong unlikelihood, that he would have kept Jeff Wilpon in a senior role. Not sure exactly what that role is, but the guy who's likely to get the team, Steve Cohen, the Met fan from Great Neck, is very close to Sandy Alderson, very close to Omar Minaya, very close to Bobby Valentine. I think there's a good chance that Alderson, who's been working for Oakland the last couple of years, will come back to the Mets. He hasn't said that to me. I've talked to him, but he hasn't said that to me. But I do think that his relationship with Cohen is such that there's a good chance he will come back. They still will need to settle the GM situation. You know, it's just it's happening now. We don't know that Steve Cohen's the guy. But my guess is that while Brody Van Wagenen has done some good things, they won a lot of games last year, made a nice comeback last year. Some of the deals have worked out. My guess is that he probably will pick his own guy, whether it's immediately or a year later. I couldn't swear to it. Oftentimes, the new owner gives the GM a little bit of time, but I think the inclination would be to make a change there. And let's face it, Brody Van Wagenen was a fantastic agent, getting some incredible contracts. So we're not going to take up a collection for him or feel sorry for him, but I would say that there's a pretty decent chance that the regime change happens at GM, and we're going to talk to Brian Cashman and ask him about whether he could be a candidate for that job as well.
Yeah. Before we get to Brian, yes, let's say that Van Wagenen definitely has a good fallback plan should he not be retained as a GM. The other thing, you mentioned Sandy Alderson. How's his health doing?
He seems to be fine. It seems to be all good. Certainly very serious scare with cancer and, you know, led to partly to him stepping down as the general manager of the Mets. Seems like he is in fine health. I'm glad that you asked that. And that's great news because he is a fantastic individual and a great baseball man. And it's great to have him around.
And one last comment, you mentioned Cohen saying the rumor being that he's may spend a lot. It reminds me of the saying, you know, a boxer has a game plan until he gets punched in the mouth. I feel like all owners say they're going to spend a lot of money until they actually get into that season, to that seat. So hopefully for Mets fans and for their sake, he is going to be true to that word.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about Steve Cohen is he really is playing cautiously and not talking out loud other than to issue a statement when one of his idols, Tom Seaver, and obviously one of the greatest pitchers of all time, passed away. And but in terms of his strategies as a Mets owner, he is playing it carefully and not talking, which is probably the way to go.
Either
way, if he says he's going to spend a lot, he's going to excite the fan base and potentially, and I don't know if this is the case, but potentially upset the owners. If he says he's going to be cheap, he might make some of the owners feel better about him and upset the fan base. But better to be quiet and let the owners assume the best for them, which is he's not going to spend too much, and let the fans assume the best for them, which is he's going to spend like crazy. We do assume, and whatever you think of the Wilpons, obviously the Madoff situation affected them, and they've been a little bit more strapped for cash than you'd expect for a New York team. And you got a guy in there who's reportedly worth $15 billion, give or take a few billion. The expectation is he will at least spend more than the Mets have spent in the previous 12 years since the Madoff situation came to light.
That's going to do it for this episode of Big Time Baseball. We'll be back next week. We'll have the playoffs in order at that point. Should be a fun, fun year.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.